Hello everybody and welcome to the Circle of Life for an App V5 package, from sequence to termination. My name is Tamim Karim, and it's an understatement probably to say I'm absolutely ecstatic to be here talking to you today at TechEd Europe 2014. It's actually my second TechEd of this year. Back in May, I was at the TechEd over in North America, over in Houston, and that was great fun as well. And not a lot has changed since then, to be honest. From an App V perspective, you know, we've had a few releases in terms of hotfixes, a few minor tweaks and features that have been introduced that we may cover over the course of this session. But that's pretty much been the picture with App V since back in May. As far as I'm concerned, in terms of me personally, not a lot has changed with me either. I'm still a Premier Field Engineer, working within the Premier Services division of Microsoft. And my job basically entails me going around the UK and the rest of the world at times, talking to customers about AppV and their wider desktop strategies. So I say not a lot has changed. Probably the only one thing that's changed about me since back in May is my physical appearance. So anyone that knew me back then would be able to rattle it off straight away. But what we're going to do is we're going to play a quick game of spot the difference. So this was me back in May. Can anyone tell me what the difference was? Pretty obvious, right? Someone said lost weight. I'm glad you say said I didn't gain weight, which is probably the case. Unfortunately, it's not that I'm taller. I've actually just grown some hair, which I guess kind of makes me taller as well, which is why I've done it. So that's me in a nutshell. I've been at Microsoft about 3.5 years now, and what we're going to cover today is AppV and its circle of life. Yeah, and we're going to really lift the lid. A behind-the-scenes view of how AppV works under the hood, regardless of delivery mechanisms. So just a quick show of hands, who here has actually worked with AppV 5 in some shape or form? Show of hands. Right, probably just less than half of the room. So that's cool as well. So we're really going to start from the beginning. For those who haven't worked with AppV at all, hopefully today's going to give you a great understanding of the fundamentals of AppV. And for those who have worked with it, please feel free to ask questions along the way. I'm happy to keep this interactive as we go through the session. So, the circle of life. Sounds really romantic, doesn't it? The circle of life of an AppV 5 package. What do we really mean by that? So when I'm talking to my customers about the circle of life for an AppV package, it's less so circle of life, because they'd probably go and walk me out of the building at that point in time. It's more so around the life cycle, right? The life cycle that your packages go through, the phases and stages that we go through in that circle of life. And what I'm going to do in this session is actually walk you through these different phases and stages. Each of these stages will have a demo that will basically lift the hood on how we handle these from an AppV perspective. And in kind of talking to our customers who work with AppV, we found that they kind of approach this life cycle or circle of life, if you like, in many different ways. A lot of these stages will be touched more than once. They might not always be touched in certain orders. And some of them will iterate over and over again before they finally get through the end of the life cycle. And I'm really here to share my experience and knowledge out in the field with my customers about how this works from an AppV perspective. So, although I said, you know, most customers won't approach this in a certain order, there is normally one particular phase that we touch as a very first stage, and that is create. The first stage is all about creating that AppV 5 package, giving life to that AppV 5 package. So what I'm going to do is take you over to my sequencing machine. If I find the right input. There we go. So my sequencing machine, this is where we create our AppV 5 package. And this machine is very similar to what you would have seen if you worked with previous versions of AppV. So again, just another show of hands. Who here has worked with AppV 4.x? So any version of 4.x. Okay, cool. So some of the people, by the looks of it, who hadn't worked with AppV 5 have actually worked with previous versions of AppV. So that's really good to see as well. So looking at the sequencer itself in terms of how much it's changed since the previous version of AppV, there are some key differences. And one of those key differences is that we no longer require a mount drive. So anyone who's worked with AppV 4.x will know about the mount drive, the queue drive that we used to have both on a sequencer and every single client machine we delivered to. And a lot of you will know from working with 4.x that queue drive was configurable to any letter you wanted. However, it had to be consistent across your environment. With the API 5 sequencer, we've actually removed that requirement. So now you can actually sequence directly to the C drive or to your system drive without that requirement for a mount drive either on a sequencer or on the client itself. So that's really good stuff. A lot of the other best practices have been carried over from 4.x as well. For example, the state of our machine. The state of our machine should be a golden image. And again, this is a subject of a lot of debate and questioning with my customers. You know, what is a golden image for me? And what it normally means, especially in a mixed environment where you might have servers, you might have VDI machines, you might have desktops, laptops, it really is the lowest common denominator in terms of OS and architecture. And a good representation of your base build. So we're talking about, you know, from my experience, we see things like your .NET frameworks, your redistributables, potentially Office there as well, if a lot of your packages are expecting to see that. But no extenuous applications, agents, or processes should really be running on this sequencer. If you do have things like antivirus or config manager agents, they should be disabled just before you start sequencing. And the reason for that is we aim to keep I/O and any activity that's going to be picked up by a sequencer to a minimum, yeah? And we want to reduce the noise. And for that very reason, we disable certain services as well. And three of those key services from a Microsoft Windows perspective are Windows Search, Windows Defender, and Windows Update. So you'll see here in my core build of this image, I've disabled those services in terms of Windows Search, Windows Update, there it is, and Windows Defender as well. Brilliant. So my machine is now in a perfect state to go off and start sequencing in my environment. And what we tend to see is this sequencer is normally a virtual machine, so you'd look to virtualize this, snapshot it, so that you can easily revert back to a clean snapshot whenever you need to. Because keeping a clean sequencer is also one of the best practices that we insist upon when you're packaging. Cool. So let's go off and sequence. So we're going to create a package so we can start moving through the circle of life for these ATV5 packages. So I've already installed my sequencer, and I've already dragged and dropped over my installer for the application we're going to work with. Now, the application we're going to work with today is called Virtual DJ. And I thought, what better thing to do with Virtual DJ than to virtualize it, right? And it pretty much is what it says on the tin. It's a bit of software for DJs to play music out with. So let's go and create a new virtual application. We get two options at this point in time. One is to create a default package, which is, you know, the default, or to use a package accelerator. Now, package accelerators, without going into too much detail, are dehydrated packages that people have already pre-created that you can kind of bring over to your sequencer and rehydrate and bring back to life without having to go through all the laborious and tedious steps that sequencer went through initially to package the application. And those are available in the community. If you head to TechNet Gallery, you'll find that we have a gallery full of these accelerators for many popular applications and packages that you might expect. Anyway, in this case, we're going to start from scratch, no cheating. Let's go for a create a package. Here we get warned about any thing that might adversely impact the state of our sequencer or the sequencing process. So if some of those services were running, if we hadn't previously reverted back to a clean sequencer, all those things will be warned to us at this point. In this case, we're good to go. Next, we're going to choose the type of application we're going to install. And if in doubt, you're always best off to go with a standard application. But what basically happens here, depending on what type of app you're sequencing, will adjust the workflow on the left here slightly differently according to that type of package. So for example, if it was an add-in or plugin, we'd be prompting you to install the primary application that plugin is for. Yeah? So it just does a bit more hand-holding in the whole process. Like I say, if in doubt, just go with standard app. We still do the same fundamental monitoring under the hood. You just have to be a bit more intuitive in terms of how you actually go about sequencing that package. So we can select our installer, or we can choose to a custom installation. Selecting the installer will basically spin up the MSI or the setup.exe or whatever you have to install your application for you. A custom installation will simply begin monitoring and wait for you to do something. Yeah? Cool. So next up, we give our package a name. So let's call this virtual DJ. And then we specify the primary virtual application directory, also known as the PVAD. Now, the PVAD is a subject of a lot of debate as well. You know, what should it be? And the Microsoft best practice to this date and time is still that this PVAD should be the location where your primary assets are delivered to. So if your application delivers its assets, for example, this one, into C program files virtual DJ, that's what your PVAD should be. And the PVAD is basically a replacement for the traditional mount drive that we have. And those who work with 4.x will probably remember we had a lot of requirements on that mount drive location in terms of naming conventions, 8.3 folder conventions, etc., uniqueness. We don't have those requirements anymore. And the reason for that will become much clearer as we progress through this session. So let's put our PVAD in, which is C program files. Brilliant. And then we click Next. And what's going to happen now is the monitoring environment, the filter driver that monitors everything that happens on this machine, is now going to be loaded. So when we arrive at this screen, essentially every single thing we're doing is now being monitored. Because we've chosen a custom installation, nothing's happening. It's just waiting for us to do something. So let's go ahead and install our application. And we're going to step through this installer, except in the EULA. I'm going to go for a custom installation just to show you the workflow I'd go through. And you can see here, the application itself is installing to my PVAD by default. Yeah, so it's important that we select that PVAD prior to you know, obviously knowing where this would install to and selecting that correctly. I've also got this location, which is actually installing to my documents folder. So I'm actually going to change that to my PVAD. And I'll explain why shortly. So that's also going to my PVAD now as well. And as tempting as it is, I'm going to resist installing the Ask toolbar and go Next. And finally install. Now my installer's going off, it's writing registry keys and files and whatever else. All of that is being picked up by a sequencer, whether it's files, reg, services, fonts, all those things are now being basically compiled into a massive list by the sequencer as being part of this sequence. And now my installation is done. I'm going to actually hold back from launching Virtual DJ at this point in time and just go to Finish. And I still get the option to do manual tasks at this point. So if I want to now crack open regedit or edit an INI file or drag and drop something onto this machine, I still could as well, and it would be monitored in this process. In this case, I'm going to choose unfinished installing because I'm happy with what I've laid down. And what's going to happen is the sequencer is now going to go off and start gathering all of those changes into that list that we talked about. So now it's done that, we're actually at a stage where we can configure our software. So what do we mean by configure our software? This actually gives us an opportunity to configure our application or our package to a golden state. How do I want my users to receive Virtual DJ? So a lot of you will know from your working life that applications, especially on first use, aren't static at all. They have a lot of questions they'll ask you, whether it's licensing or connection to a database, update preferences, everything else as well in between. So what you get the opportunity to do here is right-click and launch your application and configure it to a golden state. So you can actually check this application is in a state you want your users to get it in. So for Virtual DJ, it's pretty much in a state that I'm happy with, but I know a lot of other software would be asking me for my initials or my username and other bits and pieces. And this gives you the opportunity to get that generic state locked down into your application state. We're going to cover something later which actually allows us to tweak those states depending on where and who's getting the application, but that's a different story which we'll come on to later in this circle of life. So I'm happy with my application, so I go and click Next. And again, what we basically done there was injected that filter driver again to monitor everything that's happening in that launch phase to make sure that we're capturing that state. So what's this? We're getting a warning here saying files are being excluded from package. So you might be thinking, hang on, Tamim, you've basically lied to us. You said that we monitor every single file registry and bring it into the package. Well, that is the case, but we do exclude certain locations by default. And a lot of those locations are basically places that you wouldn't tend to want to have in your application. So we're talking about things like the recycle bin, temporary internet files and folders. And that was one of the reasons I actually changed the location of some of the installation files, if you noticed earlier, from being in my documents folder, which isn't a location, a global location you'd expect to roam or have application assets stored in, and put it in a more global location. Another key one that tends to be kind of trip customers up sometimes is App Data Local. And App Data Local is one of the locations we exclude by default, but from my experience, I've seen a lot of in-house written apps do tend to write there, although bad practice, do write to that location and don't work unless we unexclude the exclusion, which is an option we have as well. So if you spot anything in this list that looks important to your app, you see a DLL in here, or an executable, or something that's quite core to your application, then you can go ahead and unexclude that exclusion to make sure that file is included in your package. So in this case, I'm not too worried, so I go and click Next. And if I'm ultra confident, I can just stop now and save this package and deploy it. But that's not always the case. We're going to step through a few more stages and go for customization. So here we get some options around streaming. Now, streaming can sometimes be quite a contentious subject to bring up, especially with stakeholders, because they're like, whoa, streaming? No, we don't want to do streaming. We just want these to be fully in cache and run like normal apps, which is fine. But I guess the question really begs is, this application might be used in many different environments. It might be used in their RDS environment today, but what if we deliver it to a VDI environment tomorrow, or to a laptop or desktop environment later on in life? How do we want this package to behave when it isn't in cache fully 100%? And this is where we can make that definition. So what I try and do is always push my customers to optimize their package here, even if they don't want to do streaming in their environments. When they want to do that, they have some key options to take into consideration at this point in time. One is the overcautious one, which is saying, do you know what? I don't want to do any fancy streaming regardless, and tick this box, which basically says, force application to be fully downloaded into cache before I launch. And what that means is, should your user ever have the icons on their desktop and want to launch the application when it's not fully in cache, we'll require the whole application, whether it's a few meg or a few gig, to come fully into cache before they can see their splash screen and start to use the application like they normally would. So in other words, potentially an impact to that first launch experience. The other option is to define what we call a feature block definition. And we do that by right-clicking and launching the application. And by right-clicking and launching the application, we basically specify how much of this application is really needed just to launch it. Because if you think of an application, even some of our own Microsoft applications, for example, Excel, how much of Excel do we really actually use in first launch and straight after first launch? Maybe a very small proportion. And that's probably the case for a lot of your apps. To load and launch, they only require a very small portion. And what you can basically do here is launch the application and simulate that usage. So you launch it, you interact with the application, and whatever you touch in that whole sequence will actually be marked as what we call feature block one. Now, feature block one will be required to be streamed down fully in cache when the user first launches the application, and everything else, which is basically referred to as feature block two, will be just pulled down in the background while they're using the application. So this is actually a concept we had over in 4.x days as well, feature block one and two. Now, with five, we've actually took it a step further and brought in something called stream faulting. And this is actually the recommended best practice from Microsoft to take for your packages. And in fact, anyone who's sequenced and not really fully understood this might have just clicked Next and by default use stream faulting, which is our best practice, luckily. And what this basically does is takes feature block a step further. So what we actually say is, right, we have a feature block zero, which is the bare minimum that has to be on the client, for example, the icons, the shortcuts, and some key XML metadata around the application. But everything else can be streamed dynamically as and when we need it if it's not already in cache. So here you'll get a warning saying, are you sure you want to continue and stream fault this application? And if we want to follow best practice and we've got no strong reason to use any of the other two methods, we can click yes and go next. So here we get an option to restrict the OSs our application can be delivered to. Now, for those who are completely new to AppV, it's worth bearing in mind that AppV is not an app-compat solution. Ticking any of these boxes doesn't make your application work with those platforms. It's more of a case of, do you want your package to be allowed to try and publish to those particular platforms? And you can restrict that here if you want to. By default, by unticking it, well, by following the default, we're basically saying, you know, we're not going to restrict it on a package level, but your delivery mechanism will dictate where you try and publish that package to. Yeah? So we can save the package now, but I'm going to take you through to the package editor. Now, the package editor is like the nerve center of your package, yeah? And this is where you can see a lot of the core components of your package. So once I click next, we're basically going to compile this virtual package. You can see we're getting warnings about files excluded, which we already know about, so that's fine. And here we are at the package editor. Now, this looks very familiar, again, to those who've used previous versions of AppV. This is very similar, apart from some key differences. So one of the key differences is we now use GUID-based references to both our package and the version of our package. And that basically removes any requirement for our package name to be unique or for our package installation directory to be unique as well. You saw that we just use C program files wherever that it installed to. And that's because the GUID is going to take effect on the client. And trust me, you're going to get very used to seeing those GUIDs over on the client very shortly. On the deployment tab, we can review any OSs that we've restricted our package to. In this case, we haven't looked to do that. We can also review the change history. So we can look at the lineage of our package through the previous versions. In this case, we're at version 0, essentially, so there's nothing here. But if we had been through previous versions, we'd be able to step through those different versions and see who touched the package where, when, and how. On the virtual registry, pretty much self-explanatory, we can browse the registry that has been captured in this particular package. So we can see the registry keys that went to HKey local machine software virtual DJ, for example, in this instance. We can also edit, amend, add as well registry keys into here as well if we want to. On a package files location, we get exactly that, a whole collection of files that we've collated in this whole sequencing process. So if we go on package, we can look at the root of course being our PVAD location, our C program files virtual DJ location. So under the root, you can see we drop down a multitude of files and folders. And then also under here, you'll notice this folder called VFS. Now VFS stands for virtual file system. And that's basically anything that went outside of your PVAD. So this is why specifying a PVAD is important. But it's not the be-all and end-all, in that we actually still capture things that go outside of the PVAD. So you'll see here, we've captured things that have gone into C Windows, into C programs, app data, your profile, all these other locations where things have gone outside of the actual PVAD location. And that's fine. We'll just basically create what we call a VFS mapping, a virtual file system mapping to those files. And that, again, will become clearer on the client itself. We also virtualize services. The only type of service we can't virtualize is a boot time service, but traditional services are fine. In this case, virtual DJ doesn't have any. We also have some advanced options which kind of fall out of scope for this particular session. However, I will introduce you to them briefly. Basically, the first two are around the isolation methodology, so whether we want to allow kernel objects to be locally deployed and whether we want COM to be unisolated. One of the key things with AppV, just to kind of throw out there, is one of the key isolation mechanisms of AppV is that it isolates COM, right? So any COM components of your application aren't registered locally on the machine. If you ever do want COM to be locally registered, then this tick box, the second one down, will actually allow you to do that. Again, it's probably more of an advanced sequencing concept that we can probably talk about later if we have time. And then finally, we have an option to allow full write permission within our package. So basically what that means is, if a non-admin user is using your package, is it like a sandbox environment for them where they can write to any file or folder they require? And that can help you often get around certain issues with packaging where, you know, traditionally as an MSI, you would have had to make the user a local admin to actually use that application, whereas now we can deploy it as an AppV application. tick that box, and now suddenly they can write as if they were admin on the package without affecting any other users. And the not affecting any other users, again, will become clearer when we get on the client. And then finally, we have shortcuts and FTAs. So shortcuts and file type associations. So here we can browse through the different shortcuts that were laid down, any file type associations, and any shortcuts that are deployed as well with that package. We can also edit, amend, and change them from here as well. So now we're happy with our package. The only thing left to do is save it. So let's go ahead and save this package. Let's save it to my desktop. And in a few moments' time, what we'll find is, slowly but surely, we start to deliver our App V5 package into this location. And there it is. So this probably looks very different from anyone who's used a 4.x version of package. This probably looks very different. And what we've looked to do with App V5, and one of the recurring themes that you're going to actually notice as we go through this session, is that App V5 packages are much more aligned with Windows standards. And what we try to do is really bring things in line with the platform itself. So users can work with App V packages in a much more native and standardized way. So looking at the output of our sequencer, the main thing I want to highlight to you, and the main asset really in here, is the .appv. Yeah? Everything that is of importance in this scenario is inside the .appv package itself. Now you might be thinking, hang on, you just told me that everything is now Windows standard as aligned, you know, no proprietary file formats, etc. Well, and now I'm showing you a .appv. So the .appv is actually very much aligned with Windows. It's actually built up on top of the OPC standard, which is basically on top of the APEX format, which you get when you install modern applications from the Windows Store on Windows 8. So the APEX format is very much aligned with the Windows platform going forward. And the .appv is basically an extension of that APEX format. And essentially what these formats are container files. So renaming it to a .zip will allow me to actually browse the contents of this .appv. And in here, I'm going to find lots of weird and wonderful things. First of all, in the root, I can natively browse the files and folders that are part of this package. Yeah? So we can see all of the things in here. I can see the executable of my virtual DJ package, the VFS, i.e. the stuff that went outside of the PVAD location, all in here as well. You can see there we had a couple of fonts laid down, for example. Again, something that we can virtualize with App V. Going back to the root of my zip file, I also get my registry.dat file. Now, this is essentially a Hive file for the registry that we've captured in this whole process. So what I can actually do is copy this out, open up regedit if I wanted to, and actually mount or load this Hive into Reg. And there we go. I can actually browse that registry of that package just by bringing out that Hive file, that .dat. Cool. So we've got our files and our registry. That's all well and good. So what are all these other XML documents about? So what they are basically, they're metadata. They're stuff that helps our package be deployed and installed to our client machine. And some of the key ones I'm going to call out now. So we have our block map, which is basically a breakdown of where things reside in our package. And one thing to highlight to you is this .appv cannot be changed outside the sequencing process. It's not something you go to and, you know, copy a file into or change from a file share somewhere. This is an immutable state. And one of the core reasons for this is the block map itself. Anything you do to hack the .appv and change it will actually potentially corrupt the block map that we have. And what we're trying to do is really push you down a road of procedure with changing and versioning of your App V package. We also have our APEX manifest. Now, the Apex Manifest is basically like the passport for our application. It's got all of the metadata about, you know, the GUI of our package, the name, the shortcuts, the FTAs, any COM interactions, any other integrations your package has. This is the core file that describes your package. Anyone here familiar with OSDs back in 4.6 days will understand that this is basically the equivalent of your OSD. The only difference from our OSD file is that this is inside the .appv, so it can't be changed. And again, if you're thinking of the problems associated with that, we've actually got ways, better ways, in fact, to change what the manifest represents. A few other files. We have our system metadata, which is basically files that reside inside our package, so nothing too exciting in there. Our package history XML, which is basically a list of all the time someone's touched and amended this package. So it's great for like the blame game. If you want to find out who's broke your package, you can go in here and track down which machine, which user. But on a serious note, it's really good for understanding the lineage of your package and how much it's changed. You know, your package might actually be changing more than you think, and it's a good view into that. And then finally, we have our stream map. So our stream map, in this case, looks very empty. And the reason for that is because we've chose to stream fault, i.e. bring down the bare minimum as and when we need it. So you'll see here, this is actually referred to as a publishing feature block, otherwise referred to as the feature block zero. And what you'll see in here is that we've just got basically three icons. So that's all we need to be locally on the machine before my user launches the application, which makes sense. And then when they launch the application, we'll begin to stream down what we need as and when. Yeah? If we had chosen to do feature block one and two, here you'd see a definition of what is in feature block one as well. Yeah? You'd see a list of files that are in the streaming element of feature block one. Let's rename that. And there we have it. We now have our appv package ready to go and put out into our environment. So we've gone through that whole phase of creating our package. That's probably the longest phase. And to be honest, from a customer perspective, when I'm working with my clients, a lot of them see the sequencing phase, quite rightly, as the larger workload. You know, that's where a lot of time gets invested. The infrastructure and the deployment is, you know, once you set it up, which is you know, in itself a piece of work, tends to handle itself by and large, apart from the day-to-day maintenance and admin. It's really the sequencing that's the kind of the real knowledge and the workload has to go into. So once we've created our package, what do we do next? We deliver, yeah? We look to deliver that package into our environment. Now, I've worked with all types of customers, from small councils to large enterprises, and each customer has their own approach to delivering. So some customers are very boisterous, and they'll go ahead and just deliver that package straight into production. If they don't get any support calls coming in, that means everything was fine with the package. Happy days. Other customers have a much more rigid and process-driven approach to that delivery. And it's all about getting that application out to our end users so they can consume it. Yeah? So that delivery, for a lot of customers, especially our enterprise customers, will go through that process of UAT, testing, sign-off, before it eventually goes into production. And even when it does, it might go in a very kind of waterfall approach way, where a few users will get it first, and then a few more, and then a few more than everyone else. Typically, the admins will get it first on their machine. So what I'm going to do is bring you over to my client, where we're going to actually look to basically spend the rest of our time delivering and working through the rest of the life cycle, or the circle of life, as we call it, of our appv5 package. So this client is basically configured in a standalone mode. So I'm basically going to be delivering applications to this in a standalone fashion using PowerShell. And everything in appv5 is driven via PowerShell. You'll remember the SFT MIME commands we had in appv4.x, if you remember. Those are all gone. Everything now is PowerShell. I'm sure you're picking up the theme with a lot of our products now moving towards that way as well. So although we're using PowerShell, I don't want to take away the credit that whatever deployment method you do choose, whether it's Config Manager or the appv server, they're all going to be doing exactly what I'm showing you on this client under the hood. So it's great to understand this under the hood perspective, regardless of how you're going to go and deliver your applications. So the first thing that's going to happen when you go to deliver your application to your client is your mechanism, your config manager, your AppV server, your third-party tooling is going to run what we call an add-appv client package command. And what it's basically going to do is specify the location of your .appv. Now, this can exist anywhere. And when I say anywhere, not quite anywhere. It can exist anywhere that's either SMB accessible or HTTPS or HTTP accessible. So this might be a distribution point. It might be a DFS location. It might just be a bog standard file server that you have in your environment. No longer do we have any RTSP or RTSPS streaming either. So we're using very Windows standards aligned methods to stream our package. So what does this add command do? This add command basically propagates our file system. And what I mean by that will become clear when I show you the cache. Now, traditional applications live in C program files, right? We all know that. AppV applications live in a slightly different location. They live in C program data AppV. And I said you'd get very used to these GUIDs, and that's because pretty much every package is referred to in its GUID shape or form. So you'll see my package has been added now. It's 2% in cache from the very beginning. So basically what we're saying is there is the very bare minimum is 2%, i.e. those icons that are required, yeah, have been now pulled down. Nothing else is pulled down at this point in time. We're at version 1. We're streaming from this location, which is my local C drive. But this could easily be a DFS location, a distribution point, or whatever. And what we've done now is put our package into C program data app V. And in, under the GUID of our package, we then get another GUID, which is a version of our version GUID of our package. We'll see something very familiar, right? Is this looking familiar? We just saw something very similar over on my sequencer. You know, we've got our root, we've got our registry.dat file, and we've got some of those key XML files that I talked about. So we can actually browse this natively. It's not like the SFT files or the SFTFS.fsd cache file that we used to have, which was a black box in 4.6. We can actually look to double-click and browse and peruse what's inside this cache location. You might notice one key difference, though, with some of the files and folders in here. Can anyone tell me what that is? So you might notice, exactly, I see someone giving me the X symbol, exactly that. You see a lot of these packages, these files and folders have an X symbol by them. So what does that mean? What that means is these actually are placeholder files. Remember, we said our package is only 2% in cache at this point in time. Although we're seeing all the files and folders here. So if I pick on a file here, for example, this PDF help file, which is 2.5 meg, we'll see on disk at present, it's only actually 4 KB in size. So this is basically an NTFS placeholder, otherwise known as a sparse file, ready to take on that stream, should it need to, of that file. So it's just holding that until it actually needs to take on that stream. So we've added our package. The next command that your delivery mechanism will run, or you might run when you're testing, is the publish. So we're going to run a publish-appv client package and specify the name of my package, in this case, Virtual DJ. So you'll notice, even though we've added our package, I haven't got access to Virtual DJ yet. It's not on my desktop. It's not on my start menu. The publish actually gives me access as a user. So I'm going to run that command. And you'll see that this package has now been published to my user. And you'll see that that value there popping up as true. And you'll see on my desktop now, I now have access to that application. Another thing I just want to point out to you is the shortcut for this application. And you'll notice we're running the executable directly. So that's, again, a move away from the launcher process that we used to have in previous versions of AppV. We just launch the application as an exe, as we normally would. And also, under local app data is where the shortcut is running from. But I've just told you that the whole cache resides in program data. So what's going on? So what's basically happened here is because this has now been delivered to the user, we've actually put a hard link back into the cache to this local app data location. So we're not actually duping the data here. The user's running this application from local app data local, but this is really just a hard link back to the one and only cache, which actually exists in program data, the global location shared amongst all users. Yeah? So if we look at my GUI here, which is my client GUI, which you can actually download, it's a separate install. You can either download it as an MSI or as an app view package itself. This will actually give me a view into my packages. You'll see I now have Virtual DJ. It's only a tiny weeny smidgen in cache. You can see that tiny little red bit there, which is basically that 2% we're referring to in cache at present. And what we're going to do is go ahead and launch our application. And you'll see there over in the bottom corner, you probably missed it if you didn't look quick enough, is we've streamed what we need of the application into cache, enough for me to start using this application. And there we go. Virtual DJ is now delivered to my user, so now he can go out and start DJing at his big old venues and whatever he has to do. If we hit refresh, you'll notice that this cache has started to move across as well. So what's happening in the background is we're streaming into cache everything that's not in cache already. And even after I've closed the application, it's continued to stream because I've previously used the application. And we have a setting called auto load, which is making sure that that is being auto loaded into my cache. And it'll carry on going until it goes nice and bright green, indicating it's fully in cache. And what you'll notice going back to my cache over in C program data app V, GUID, GUID, root, is that those X symbols that we saw earlier have now disappeared. So if we look at that same PDF, we'll see it's the same size on disk as it is in real life, right? So it's been fully streamed down into my cache. So the next thing I want to show you is the registry perspective. So how things work from a virtual perspective in terms of registry. So we looked at files and folders. We know that, you know, rather than in C program files, then C program data at v GUID GUID. What about registry? Now, to give you a good view in that, the best thing for me to do is actually break into the bubble. And we're going to break into the bubble using a few PowerShell commands. The first thing I'm going to do is store into the variable dollar package the output of get-appvclient package virtual DJ. Basically, everything you see above here, I'm going to store into this variable dollar package. So if I do a dollar package now, I should see I get the output, which is my get-appvclient package output. Yeah. And the reason I've done this is to make my next command, which is breaking into the bubble, a bit easier. So I'm now going to run my next command, which is start-appvvirtualprocess, -client object, which is dollar package, my package that I want to infiltrate. And then following that, I have the process that I want to inject into that application. So you'll see my application isn't running at present, it's closed down. But what we're going to do is actually bring up that virtual environment. And rather than running virtual DJ, we're going to inject command prompt. Now, command prompt tends to be the favorite for people because from that same command prompt, you can then launch something else, and that will also be in the bubble. And what we're basically doing is elevating the level that we're operating at so we can actually see what see command prompt from the application's perspective rather than from an OS perspective. And again, that's going to make a bit more sense very shortly. So while that's loading, let's take a look at the local reg. The local registry. We've delivered this application. My user's using it. No problems at all. But where is the registry? Where has it gone? Traditionally, if this was a local application, we'd be looking in HKEY local machine software virtual DJ. But it's not there. What we do is very similar to what we do with files. We abstract that location to a GUID-based location that we can reference. So under Microsoft AppV client packages, we'll again see that very familiar GUID. And we can drill down into our package. Till we get to a point where we can actually see the registry for our package itself. So there it is, it's just tucked away, it's hidden away, so other packages can't be delivered and start conflicting with the same package. So that's the local perspective of the application. What you might have noticed is I've actually got a new command prompt popping up. And this command prompt, believe it or not, is actually inside the bubble of virtual DJ. It's inside that virtual environment. And just to prove that, actually, if I hit refresh here, you'll see my virtual DJ is in use, even though my package itself isn't up and running. And what I'm going to do is from here is launch a regedit. just to show you the difference over here on the right-hand side between the native view and the virtual view. So if I go to the same location, HK Local Machine Software, I actually see Virtual DJ. So that's starting to make sense now, right? My application Virtual DJ carries on its merry way as it normally would, right to all the same locations it normally would, C program files, HK Local Machine Software, Virtual DJ, whatever, and it doesn't have to know about AppV. AppV does the magic under the hood by making changes, making this registry appear to be in its normal location, when really we know, because we're AppV experts, it really exists under HK Local Machine Software, Microsoft, AppV, Client, Packages, GUID, GUID, there it is, yeah? Question? Good question. So the question is, can we make changes? And the answer is yes. And it's a good question you have, because we're actually going to cover state changes next. So what happens when we look to change our package? So hopefully that will become even clearer very shortly. So you'll notice when I close down my command prompt, after a short while, my package will then become out of use or not in use anymore. There you go. So my package is now closed down. That virtual environment is closed. So we delivered our package. And I have to thank the member of the audience at the very front here who asked about the next phase. So what happens? What tends to happen from experience is you deliver that package. It works perfectly. Everything's great. And the first thing your users want to do is inflict change, yeah? And it's a pain, I know, for a lot of us, but it's also something we, as people managing the infrastructure, have to appreciate, respect, and manage. And you know, that change is, most of the time, positive change. You know, your users look to really put a stamp on the application, make it their own. However, sometimes that change can be detrimental as well. And you know, we need to know how to support reverting those changes back to a stable state. So what I'm gonna do is take you back to my client, to talk about change, the next stage of the circle of life. So on this machine, I still have the same package. I'm just running a get-appv client package, virtual DJ. And you can see I have my same package, version 1, is 100% in cache now, which is good, and it's all good for my user. Let's go and make some changes. So my user launches the application, and they know a whole lot about DJing more than I do. And they decide to configure their application. And they go to options, and they want to change one of these settings. Very technical. Let's change auto gain to be disabled, for example. I haven't got a clue what that does, but that's not for me to know. So my users now change their application. How does that now actually get influenced on my machine? So there's a few key conversations here to have. The first is that our package state, the .appv, even once it's in cache, can't be changed. Yeah? So that program data at V location is immutable. You can't go there. It's ACL down to the nth degree, so no users, even admin, can go and change stuff in there. So that registry.dat file, that high file, isn't getting changed. Let's have a look at where that change goes. So I know from using this application that this application stores its changes in registry. The only other way an application might store its changes is, of course, in file system. But we'll cover off registry in this case. And because this is a user change, we're going to see it in HKey current user, software. Now, if we're in a bubble, we'd be just going to virtual DJ at this point in time. But because we're not and we know how AppV works, we're actually going to go to HKey local, HKey current user, software, Microsoft, AppV, client, packages, and there we have it, that shining GUID that we're seeing more often than not. We drill down into registry. We have a SID relating to my particular user, software, virtual DJ, and there you go. There's the changes that have been made. And if we go to auto gain, we'll find that value has been changed to 0, i.e. disabled for this particular package for this particular user. And going back to the question we had, there's nothing to stop us directly modifying this registry here either. It's all treated as what we call state changes. So for those who worked with previous versions of AppV, you remember PKG files, they're gone. We write directly to registry and directly to file system in these abstracted locations. One thing that isn't gone, however, is the ability to repair. So as long as our package isn't in use, which I'll just double check, we can repair our application. We can repair it either using PowerShell, or we can repair it from the GUI as long as the package isn't in use by hitting this spanner repair icon that we have here. And what a repair will do is wipe down those state changes for you. And it's a great move that we've got now, is that you know, you've got the ability now to either repair the whole package, i.e. wipe down all the changes, or because we know that things are being written to local registry and file system, we actually have the ability to modify those settings directly as well, if we want to just change one setting or revert one setting. Another key conversation this opens up as well is user state management. And this is where things like UEV really come into their own in helping us to roam those app V settings between machines so that you know it doesn't matter if I'm on one machine using Virtual DJ as an app V application, and then later on I log on to a VDI instance where it's installed locally, my setting for auto gain will roam seamlessly using something like app V, UEV between the two environments without me having to do anything at all. Again, check out the UEV sessions that we've got. I think tomorrow, actually, there's a great session on UEV and VDI by one of my colleagues, Aaron Ruckman. So what we should find is, if we open up Virtual DJ now, is that setting has now been changed back to its golden state. Auto gain is now back to what I intended it to be. And this is a common thing that you might find, you know, with your desktop support team. You know, users ring up the help desk, you know, my application's broken. Really, all they've done is configured it in a way that looks foreign to them. You know, they might have hidden a toolbar or something. You can easily revert it back to this golden state by doing what we call a repair. So that covers off change. We delivered our package, we've seen our users change it, we might have even gone as far as roaming those changes with our users. There also comes a time, potentially in the life cycle of your package, where you as an admin want to change your package. Yeah? You want to actually do something beyond the standard customization that your users want to do. You want to look to adapt your package. And it really comes into a key conversation where you've sequenced your package once, and you want to be able to use that package in all the different environments and shapes and forms you'd expect. So for example, you might sequence it today for your desktop environment, but what if a VDI environment spins up in the coming year and now you want to use that same package? You don't want to have to resequence it just because you need it to behave slightly differently. So how do we adapt our package to different environments and make it merge and blend in with those new environments? So back on the client, I'm just going to run a get-appvclient package, a command that you're very familiar with now, to see that we still have our package 1, 100% in cache, everything's all well and good, published to my user as well. So what if I wanted this package to be a bit more customized? What if, say, at one of the very many parties that are happening here at TechEd, we wanted to customize this for this particular occasion, yeah? Rather than having to go back to the sequencer and change my package all over, and you know, making it from scratch just for TechEd Europe 2014, I can actually choose to amend it on the fly using what we call my deployment config XMLs. So if I go back to my package here, you'll notice a couple of the files that I neglected to kind of draw your attention to on the sequencer were these two XMLs. And they reside outside of the .appv, which means, of course, we can change them. And basically what they are, they're there for post-adaptation of your package, both on a machine level via the deployment config and a user level via the user config. And what they do is allow you to layer changes on top of that manifest XML, which is the core delivery of your package, which doesn't change. Layer changes depending on different environments and different scenarios you find this package in. So for example, we want to adapt this package for TechEd. So what I've done is I copied my user config XML and named it user config adapt. And what I've done is actually changed my shortcut. So you notice my shortcut at the moment is virtual DJ home free, which doesn't sound too great to be honest. So I've gone ahead and changed my shortcut by editing this XML to Techhead Virtual DJ. So that's much more appropriate for the occasion. Also, just to kind of give you a bit more insight into this, you know, beyond editing the shortcuts, file type associations, we can also do scripting. It's at the very bottom here. We can actually run scripts. And this is something people using OSDs were very used to as well. And we have a lot of those same capabilities, if not more now. So we have different events. In this case, I'll put in a very kind of basic script, if you even want to call it a script, which basically will map a network drive at start of the virtual environment, i.e. when I launch the application, and also map close that network drive when they close the application. And that network drive basically stores all the music that my DJ is going to use at my TechEd Europe 2014 event. So we can see that that's going to happen when my user uses this application. So how do we apply it? You know, we made an XML, that's all great, but how do we actually get this to be influenced on this delivery? So with Config Manager, it has its own way of interpreting and bringing in these XML documents. With the AppV server, we also recognize these XML documents and allow you to import them in for certain deliveries to certain users or computers. But all they do under the hood, again, is PowerShell. And that's why I'm showing you PowerShell today. What's going to happen under the hood is upon publish for the user XML, we're actually going to specify an additional parameter. So we're going to do a publish AppV client package, virtual DJ, and then we're going to specify this parameter of dynamic user configuration path. And we're going to specify that location of that XML that we want to now influence upon this delivery. We hit return, and we'll see straight away my shortcut name has changed for this particular delivery. I'm going to go ahead and launch my application, and we should find very shortly as well my script runs, which will map my network drive. Just to show you what's happened under the hood, when we ran that command, because that user is a user config that we've deployed, under my user profile, under app data roaming, Microsoft AppV, client catalog, we'll actually see my packages in here. So I can see my GUID for my package. And I can actually see the configuration XML, the dynamic configuration that has been applied to this user with my settings. For example, my customized link. And if I go back to my computer, we'll see I now have my network drive mapped, which contains all my tunes ready to blast out at a TechEd party that's going to take place. And this is a very kind of dip your toe in approach to the scripting that takes place. I mean, as many of you will know more than me probably, scripting really opens the doors to doing anything that you want to do that's out the box. You know, scripting will really allow you to explore things that we can't natively do with AppV. But this does tend to be one that I've seen, you know, used by a lot of customers, mapping network drive. And as you can see, it's been unmapped upon close of the application. Brilliant. So we're kind of halfway through our journey, although we've done most of it. I know we've only got about less than 20 minutes left in this session. But we've gone through a lot of the life cycle now. We've looked at creating our package. We've delivered it to our client. We've looked at how user changing our package will be affected. We've also looked at adapting it from an admin perspective to different use cases and different environments. However, there comes times where adaptation isn't enough. We need to go ahead and update our package. We need to go to the latest and greatest, bigger and better stages for our application. And in which case, we need to look to update our application. And updates only happen in one place, and that's the sequencer. So I'm going to bring you back to my client, in fact, to talk about updates. And I've done all the work on the sequencer to save time. And what you'll notice is I've gone back to my sequencer. I've taken my virtual DJ package back there. I've literally opened it up, chose to edit my package and update it, began monitoring again, changed my package, and saved it. And what I've actually got outputted is very much the same stuff I had before with the new stuff, with an underscore 2 designating that, you know, this is an update to the package. It's appended that numbering to my package. So here's my version 2 package ready to deploy in my environment. How does it get out there? So if we look at what we've got at the moment, we've still got my version 1 package, which we're probably growing a bit bored of now. We now want to update it. And this update actually has a new look and feel. It has a TechEd Europe 2014 look and feel. So you'll know when this application has been updated. And we want to deploy this out to my environment. If we're using Config Manager, we'll be using something called Supersedence to influence that update to my endpoints. If we're using App vServer, we'll import that update, and my server will know that it's an update and give me options about how I want to deploy it. And again, they all do the same thing, PowerShell. And the commands are very similar. These aren't going to be new to you. The same as how we added the package in its first place. The first command that's going to be run is an add package. And we're going to specify the location of my new underscore 2appv. And what happens? We integrate the cache. We populate that file system, right? And you'll notice, very strangely, my package is already 98% in cache. Can you see it? And it's not actually yet deployed to my users or my computers yet. So what's happening here is we actually use differentials. Because I've only changed something very minor about my application, we're actually only changing the differentials and requiring those to be streamed down. And because the original AppV package is 100% in cache, we're allowing that to be leveraged for the primary assets, and anything that changed, i.e. 2% in this case, has to be delivered down upon launch or thereafter. If I go to my cache in C program data, AppV, you'll see I now have two folders under my parent GUID, and they represent the two different versions. So you can see my 5346 here is my new version, and that's in there with all its files and folders that, you know, we've talked about already. But my delivery hasn't yet commenced. The delivery now requires a publish. And again, you've seen this command when we first delivered the application, although it looks slightly lengthy now. And it looks a bit more intimidating than it did when we first ran the publish command. But don't be thrown off. We're running a publish app v client package, which you're familiar with. And rather than just specifying virtual DJ, that's actually become a bit too generic now because I have different versions. So now I need to be a bit more specific. So I've specified the package ID and put in the whole package ID and the version ID of that package that I want to publish. Yeah, because I want to be a bit more specific and granular about what I'm doing. And then I finally specified the location to my dynamic configuration to adapt my package to TechEd, as we've already done. So let's go ahead and run that command. And you'll see now this has been published to my user. Yep. An interesting thing, if I do a get-appvclientpackage virtual DJ-all, is it shows me all instances of virtual DJ in cache. And you'll see I have two packages, my version 1 and my version 2. And version 1 has been automatically unpublished. Yeah? So what happens is our client always runs with the latest version that's available to my user. So because version 2 is now available to this user, version 1 gets unpublished. I guess the only thing left to do is launch the application and check that this has a Barcelona TechEd feel to it. And of course it does. Great, so we've updated our package, ready for TechEd, the TechEd party that's about to take place. Another key phase of our life cycle, and it's influenced by the isolation that takes place, is, you know, the isolation is great. You know, it's great to have our packages, you know, completely oblivious to one another, but there's also times where we need our packages to connect. We need multiple app view packages to be able to interface directly with one another. You know, we don't want that isolation to take place sometimes. And that becomes really key in conversations when we're talking to customers about, you know, things like Java dependencies or other kind of dependents or add-ins and plugins. You know, we want to package things separately, but we want them to work together when we deploy them to our clients. We want them two elements to come together to work in harmony. And we really want to talk about connect. And for that, I'm going to bring you back to my client. Brilliant. So I'm going to do a get-appvclientpackage. And what we see is we have two different packages now deployed to this machine. We have our basically, what I've done is I've split up this package into two independently serviceable packages. One is the core application itself, and the other part is the actual the skins or dependency of its look and feel. So if I show you on the client GUI, it'll probably make a bit more sense. There we go, two parts of the same package. So Virtual DJ has been split up into the app itself and into its skins, which is a requirement of this package, a dependency. Yeah? What we're going to find is, if I launch this package now, you know, I've delivered these two independent packages. I'd expect them to find each other and work together. However, when the application launches, I get an error message that we couldn't find the dependent. You know, this application hasn't got what it needs to load. And that's because, by default, as we've seen, files are all off in these GUID locations that are abstracted. So is registry in these weird and wonderful locations. There's no reason for that app one to see app two in this instance. So how do we get around that? We get around that using something called connection groups. Now, connection groups are essentially, under the hood, XML documents. And I wouldn't expect in your day-to-day administration for you to have to actually interface with these XML documents unless you're working in a purely standalone mode. So Config Manager actually spins these up directly for you, and so does the AppV server. Config Manager refers to connection groups as virtual environments and will allow you to specify relationships, which is exactly what these XMLs do. Now, the XML basically gives a name to your connection group, i.e. group of applications. It gives it a unique version ID and a connection group ID, so the connection group itself is unique. And then finally, it lists the packages via their IDs, both version and package, in a list inside the XML context. So all this is a description of a relationship. And like I say, in your working life with Config Manager or the server, it's more of a drag and drop exercise. You know, you say this app and this app, they belong together, make sure that they're in a connection group, and then you never have to touch anything thereof. In a standalone mode, what will happen is in the background, Config Manager will spin up this XML, and in the background, it will run PowerShell. And the PowerShell will run is an add-app v client connection group, and it will specify the location of that XML. So there you go, that has now been registered with this machine. And then finally, after the add, very similar to a package itself, rather than a publish, unfortunately, we do it enable. We now enable an AppV client connection group. We specify the name. And in this case, I'm actually enabling this package globally. So i.e., because the package itself, you'll notice, is published to the machine, if I just scroll up a bit, you see the packages themselves have been deployed to the machine globally rather than to the user. I'm actually enabling my connection group as well on a global level. Once I've done that, if I click on the app connection groups tab and do a refresh, we should find my virtual connection group is now ready to go. If I click on it here, we'll see that I can see the members of this relationship. So with any luck, next time my user goes off and launches their application, because those two independent applications are now part of that same relationship, it launches perfectly fine. And you might be asking, you know, why would you want to go to that length? You know, why would you want to split those up? You know, there's a lot of cases where customers want to be able to, you know, update a part of the application without having to touch the primary assets. For example, say you were loading in Java with every single package that needed Java, every time you wanted to then increment a Java version, you'd have to touch every single one of those packages independently, which could present a big workload. Whereas if you package Java separately, you'd have the option to update Java on a separate basis and maintain your packages out there and just change relationships using either virtual environments in Config Manager or connection groups to the AppV server. Another thing you're going to notice as well, just to bring your attention, is the repair functionality. As soon as your application is in a connection group, you lose the ability to repair it on an independent basis, and state change becomes attributed to the connection group itself. So I can repair the connection group, but I can't repair an app individually. So we're very near to the end of the circle of life now. We've looked at connecting different applications and their AppV applications, right? What about when we need our package to be even, even take that step further? So we're talking about at V to at V, you know, how we can make them talk to each other and have that relationship. But what about the wider integration? What about when we need to integrate our at V application with a wider platform? You know, there's other things installed locally as MSIs. There's the operating system. There's local processes and services that I want to be able to interact with my application. By default, because of the isolation, it's not always possible. Let's head back over to the very familiar client by now and look at integration. So just doing a get-app client package again, you'll notice I've got my two applications in here that we've been working with, independently deployed, however, in a connection group. Now imagine my DJs were used to launching a local process of MS Paint. And they're used to actually changing the look and feel of their application themselves in their image editing piece of software, which is normally locally installed. So they're used to going to MS Paint, going to Open, when this was traditionally MSI delivered, they'd go to program files, virtual DJ. In this case, they don't find it, yeah? And they'd normally go here and they'd launch up their skin and they'd change it and customize it to how they want. However, now, because we've delivered an app V, they can't use it how they normally would. And this is something I'm really against, is app V presenting any additional knowledge transfer for our end users. I believe end users should be able to work as they normally would, regardless of technology, and not have to have a learning curve because we want to make our lives easier with app V. So how would we now give this local process access to the virtual environment? We have something called Run Virtual. Now, Run Virtual is a registry key which lives in HKey local machine software Microsoft App V client. And there it is, and it's empty. But inside here, we can populate names of local processes that we want to have a view into our virtual application. Yeah? Now, since SP2 onwards, we've had a lot of features that allow us to do things like shortcut integration and also things like shell extensions. So those kind of Explorer shells, they're all supported by default. Also browser helper objects, which allow us to use things like Flash plugins. So if I was sequencing a Flash plugin by default, it'd interface with IE locally regardless of Run Virtual. However, Run Virtual will allow us to use it for anything else that's not covered by those defaults. So for example, if we had an add-in that we wanted to virtualize for something that's locally installed, we could configure that. In this case, we want to use MS Paint. So let's head over to my PowerShell. I'm just going to import a reg key. And you'll see now in here, I've put in a mspaint.exe as a location. And my value here, my default value, I've actually put in the package GUID underscore the version GUID of the package that I want my MS Paint local process to have a view into. Yeah? So this is using Run Virtual. Now what should happen, now that reg key is populated, if I launch MS Paint as a local process, no additional workload to the user, you'll notice that even by launching MS Paint, my package is in use. So we're actually calling that virtual environment to become present for this local process. So now if I go to open here, I should be able to go to C, program files, virtual DJ, skins. And there we go. I can actually launch my package here and work with the skin. I can even customize it if I want. I'm not too much of an artist. There we go. Save that out. And what I'm going to do is just send this off to a zip file because that's how the application expects it. And next time my user launches the application, they've used a local process to amend it. They can now go ahead and configure their package to use that custom skin that they've edited and changed. So, we're right near the end of our life cycle. And this is probably one part of the life cycle that a lot of customers don't get to explore quite painfully sometimes is the termination. A lot of our customers have a package that they just really want to get out of the environment, that legacy application they just can't get rid of, but there does often come a day when it's time to now terminate. You know, that application is just not fit for purpose, there's new and better things available, we now need to now go ahead and terminate that package from our environment. So there's a few ways of doing it. Again, from a config manager point of view, you can use, you can look to obviously uninstall that application. We can use appv also to unpublish that application. And under the hood, they do a very similar thing. I'm just going to step you through a bit more of a granular way of how it might work under the hood in a cleaner fashion. So the first thing we can do is repair our package to remove any user states. And this isn't handled by default via either the delivery mechanisms I mentioned. And that will repair the connection group and get rid of any user states for that package. We can then disable our connection group, which will make that connection group not available to my user anymore. So you'll see that disappears, and that now I'm left with two individual applications. I can then remove that connection group. However, the two packages will still remain. I can then unpublish my package, which will remove any user entry points to that application. However, it will remain still in cache. You see my cache here still alive and running. And then finally, I can choose to remove my package, which will actually remove it from its cache location. So that brings us to the end of the circle of life. We talked about creating our package on the sequencer, delivering it using PowerShell, but we could use Config Manager or the AppV server using the add and the publish, changing it from a user perspective and things like UEV, which will help us to roam those settings, adapting our package using the config XMLs, either a user or deployment, also updating our package on the client machine, connecting it using connection groups, integrating our package with local processes, and finally, that phase we look forward to, terminating our applications from our environment when they're no longer fit for purpose. So I know we've run out of time, so any questions, please feel free to come up to the mics or come up and talk to me later. Do check out my blog, which is at www.virtualvibes.co.uk, which contains links to every single thing we covered today. So all of the demos, the run virtuals, the updates, is all documented pretty well over on my blog, which is virtualvibes.co.uk. There's a whole bunch of related content. I'm actually going to be on the Windows Management booth over the course of the week, so catch me there. Catch me at Ask the Experts, and also catch these brilliant sessions we have around AppV over the coming session, coming days. I believe I'm the first AppV session of the week so far. Also, for your use as well, for those who've been taking notes especially, we've actually uploaded this whole presentation up onto Microsoft Virtual Academy. So you can actually watch back this whole presentation from this very second over on Virtual Academy and actually test yourself. You know, it's quite interactive in how it's laid out. So you can actually get to grips with some of the concepts we talked about over this session. And don't forget, we've got a ton of resources out there. And most importantly as well, please, please, please do fill out your evaluations. They're very important to both myself and to the TechEd team in understanding your feedback on this session. Thank you very much for being here. Enjoy the rest of your week.